out Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Sam Johnson, and he'll be answering your questions on fly fishing Virginia's Blue Ridge Parkway. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Sam a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill out the form on the right side of our homepage, and we'll let you know when the next live show will be. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website about 48 hours after the show ends. You can also find it on any of the podcast sites like Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website or any of the podcast platforms at your convenience and listen to the recording at any time. If you're out and about on Facebook, Instagram, or X, we'd sure appreciate it if you'd share a podcast. And when you do, use hashtag AskAboutFlyFishing and also hashtag FlyFishing. In fact, if you have a moment, do it right now while you're listening to the show. That would be wonderful. And the content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. And when we return, we'll be talking with Sam Johnson about fly fishing Virginia's Blue Ridge Parkway. Enrico Puglisi flies pride themselves in creating unique and one-of-a-kind flies and fly tying material. Enrico has been experimenting with durable synthetic and natural materials to create flies and catch fish for more than 30 years. His innovative products include brushes, fibers, and components that have made a major impact on the direction of saltwater fly fishing, and his methods and materials are respected worldwide. Whether you want your flies hand-tied for you or you like to tie your own, be sure to visit Enrico Puglisi Flies and browse through their online catalog. Visit epflies.com and do a little shopping today. Again, that's epflies.com. Before we introduce Sam, we'd like to let you know about the great prizes we have to give away tonight. For our drawing tonight, we'll be giving a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International and a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Sam's section that says Register for our free drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Sam's latest book, Fly Fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway, Virginia Section, courtesy of Mountain Arbor Press. Now, here's how you can win. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something that we've talked about during the show, and you'll have to submit your answer along with your name and location using that text box on our homepage. So listen closely and take notes, pay attention, type fast, and maybe you'll be the proud winner of Sam's latest book, Fly Fishing, the Blue Ridge Parkway, Virginia Section. Our guest tonight is Sam Johnson. Sam is a dedicated fly fisher with a deep passion for remote fly fishing and an avid writer about the pristine waters of the Appalachians, Rockies, and Sierras. His expertise and love for the sport extend to his choice of gear, particularly bamboo rods. Sam not only fishes with bamboo rods, but also crafts, collects, and sells them, showcasing his commitment to the art and tradition of fly fishing. In addition to his angling pursuits, Sam is the executive producer and co-host of the popular TV show Wild Bearings Outdoors. This show, which premiered in 2023 on the Country Network, takes viewers on a journey to exotic fly fishing destinations, exploring their history, lore, and angling opportunities. Sam's engaging storytelling and in-depth knowledge bring these locations to life, captivating audiences and fellow anglers alike. Beyond his fishing endeavors, Sam has a unique talent for playing the bagpipes. As a member of the John Moore McIntosh Pipes and Drums in Atlanta, he performs across the country, sharing his musical talents and adding a distinctive note to his diverse range of interests. Sam embodies a blend of adventurous spirit, artistic talent, and professional acumen, making him a respected, multifaceted figure in both the fly fishing community and the business world. Sam, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Roger, greetings from the mountains of North Georgia. It's really great to be with you here on Ask About Fly Fishing
program. Well, good to have you. Good to have you. You're a mountain man, too. A little bit different mountains than we have out here in Colorado, Albeit a little lower, not as sharp, but we'll give it to
Yeah,
you.
well, they're old. They may not be bigger, but they're older.
They're older. There you go. That's not always better, Sam. We were just talking about that before
Thank
the
you,
show.
thank you.
Oh, yeah. Well, good, good. It'd be fun to talk tonight and explore the Blue Ridge Parkway. And you just published your most recent book, Fly Fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway, the Virginia section, because prior to that, you published one for North Carolina, correct?
That's correct. That was
Yeah.
published and actually at the very beginning of COVID,
Oh,
ironically.
wow.
So
Oh,
it's been
wow.
about 3.5 years roughly. And then the Virginia section, which completes that series, was published about 4 months ago.
Now, what inspired you to write, the two books about the Blue Ridge Parkway?
Well, very good question. I decided at some point there was not another book about specifically about fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway. And, people found out that I'd been fishing up and down the parkway all of my life, had a lot of information about it. And quite frankly, I just got tired of answering questions and taking calls and emails. And I said, well, I'm going to sit down and bang out an outline for the North Carolina section and see if I can get all of my notes and thoughts and everything down on paper. And so that was really the genesis of the two books, is that there were not books about fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway. And so I decided, well, somebody's got to do it, and I wound up being the sucker who got roped into doing it.
Well, sounds like it was a little labor of love, though. All right. Yeah. I mean, you've done a
It
lot.
definitely was.
Yeah,
Def
I've done a lot
definitely
of.
was.
I know there's been books on the Blue Ridge Mountains, but like you say, not on the parkway specifically, which
Yeah.
is unique. Yeah. Well, give us a little background about the parkway because it's got its own history other than fishing it, right? How
Please.
did it come to be?
Well, it came to be back during the Depression of the last century. In 1933, President Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, was visiting Shenandoah National Park in Virginia. And the senator at that time, one of the senators, was Harry Flood Byrd. And Harry Flood Byrd made the suggestion to President Roosevelt, hey, they just finished the Great Smoky Mountain National Park down at the other end of the Appalachian chain. Why don't we build a road along the ridges all the way from Shenandoah National Park all the way down to the newly commissioned, newest entry of the national parks, Smoky Mountain National Park? And President Roosevelt, being the progressive, forward-thinking person he was, said, hey, that's a heck of an idea. We can kill a lot of birds with one stone. We can create a great roadway for people in these new cars that they're buying. We can create jobs for people up and down the parkway. And we'll create a new national park, which is the Blue Ridge Parkway. So that's really the genesis of the whole Blue Ridge Parkway, is that on September the 11th of 1935, there at Cumberland Gap, Cumberland Knob, at the line between North Carolina and Virginia, they started construction. And in September the 11th of 1987, they actually finished. 52 years later, they completed the 469 miles of the Blue Ridge Parkway. And that's how it came to be.
Wow, that did take a long time, huh?
Well,
Wow.
it's a very rugged road, just the engineering of it, the surveying of it, and of course the acquisition of the property had to go through a
Right.
lot of different, you can imagine you probably could not even do it today, if you change the era that it's in when they started it. It would probably be impossible to do what they did back then today. But they did get it done. It was visionary thinking, and they created what's truly, Roger, a national treasure.
Yeah, I imagine there would be all kinds of environmental issues and then private land ownership
Yeah.
issues and things today that they'd have to fight through. And like you say, yeah, and it's very unique, like we were talking about earlier. I've only been on a small part of it and never fished it, but I was very much impressed with what I did see up in Virginia. So
Yeah.
that's why when I saw your book out there, I said, oh, yeah, that I remember that and should do a show about it. So here we are. Yeah.
Well, here we are. Yeah. And when you think about it, Roger, the parkway runs along the ridge, mostly right. along the Appalachian chain, to the southwesterly pattern. And think of all the water that comes off of those ridges on both sides of the parkway. There's watersheds on both sides of the parkway that create trout water. That was really one of the things that motivated me, is that there's all this trout water off the parkway. You don't have to do anything except just drive up and down the parkway and jump off onto this water, and you could fish the rest of your life and never go anywhere else.
Was that a consideration in its original design, or was that just the luck of the draw, so to speak, for fishermen?
It had absolutely nothing to do with the original design. The original design was to create a roadway for people who were buying, you know, the automobile was very new back in the 20s and early 30s and getting affordable to where people could buy them. And they wanted places that they could go drive and have scenery and see beautiful things. And so one of the motivations of building the parkway the way they did is they wanted to create a place where they could drive and, you know, stop, get out, picnic, drive some more, and just have a, you know, a leisurely day. It really had nothing to do with fishing or anything else other than just leisure travel and, of course, supporting the local communities that were up and down the parkway with tourism.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Is there camping within the park?
There's camping all up and down the Blue Ridge Parkway. And the National Park Service, the Blue Ridge Parkway, in fact, has a map, a free map, that you can pick up or order at any of their locations that's got all of the campsites that are designated, along with the contact information. But yeah, one of the great treats about fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway, if you're a camper like me, is that there's both wilderness camping and I call dude camping all up and down the parkway for people who have motorhomes or tents and things like that.
Yeah, we made the mistake of borrowing a friend's trailer this summer twice. And my wife now states she will not go camping again in a tent. So, I might have screwed that up. I don't know.
But, well, that's right. My wife is the same way. If it's not dude camping with showers and flushing toilets, she's not going. So.
Well, I think the biggest draw was, you don't have to go outside in the tent and squat in the middle of the night to go pee. That's a real advantage.
that certainly is.
Yeah, and so, yeah, that was a big thing for her. So we'll see how this goes in the future. But it is a little bit more comfortable than sleeping on the ground, I have to admit.
Well, it is. And for fly fishermen like us, you know, whether you're a wilderness camper or you're a dude camper, there are plenty of facilities, not only national park facilities attached to the parkway, but there are also dozens and dozens of camping facilities right off the parkway in the local communities. So it's the local communities really cater to the tourism trade.
Do you have any idea how far in advance you have to make reservations to actually camp in the park?
Roger, that's a good question. And the answer to that has to do with seasons. Mm-hmm. You know, as you get into the summer and you get into the leaf season of the fall, you better have reservations several months in advance. So it's never too early to get reservations at these campsites.
Yeah, here in Colorado we're facing now just regular camping in the summer, no special occasion. But, yeah, we have to get on 6 months in advance to reserve a campsite. There are places that, you know, it's first come, first serve, but then you're not guaranteed that you're going to have anything. So,
well, that's right. Yeah. And you travel quite a ways to get there sometimes. And, you know, what we've seen and what the park officials have told me and what I've experienced by being a board member of the Blue Ridge Parkway Foundation, so we're pretty closely attached to the National Park Service and the management of it. What we've seen is that during COVID, so many people got out of their house with their family unit or individually and traveled in small groups. And they absolutely started discovering places that they, you know, like the Blue Ridge Parkway. People who had never been on the parkway have discovered it, and they've discovered right. camping too. So the occupancy rate for and the travel rate, the miles driven on the parkway, are way up from what it was, you know, 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, I bet. Well, speaking of seasons, Phil Burden in North Carolina, he's asked, what time of year would be the best times to visit? And I assume they mean for fishing. We just talked about leaf season, but that's a great sure. time usually to go fishing too. So.
Well, it is at the beginning of leaf season. Of course, you know, all of you fly fishermen, you know, leaf season can cause real problems, especially in the higher elevations where the parkway, a lot of the parkway runs, especially in North Carolina. You know, you can stagger your fishing because the leaves will come off in the higher elevations first. You're going to want to be there in the earlier part of the season and then the latter part of the season, lower elevations. But what I find to be the best time on the parkway for fly fishing is early spring, you know, after the ice and snow gets off and all of the sections are open for the areas you want to get on, or late fall. You know, after leaf season, all the way through until, you know, after Thanksgiving, approaching Christmas. Those are the times that I spend a lot of time in the mid to lower elevations. And then even in the summer, when it's hot, like it is right now, in North Georgia, you know, trout fishing is pretty hard right now because of water levels and temperatures. But when you get above about 4,500 feet, 5,000 feet, in some of the areas along the Blue Ridge Parkway, especially in Carolina, even in the middle of summer, you can fly fish. The water is still cool enough. There's still plenty of water, dissolved oxygen, and you've got a lot of fish to catch.
When you say early spring, do you have runoff issues like we have out west here of dirty water and so forth, or is it all pretty clear?
Well, one of the great things about the parkway, of course, is it's running the ridges of the Appalachian chain, so you don't have a lot of development around the parkway itself. So the water, as it sources and starts, the hydrology loads up the watersheds and it starts going down into mostly national forest in North Carolina. As you get up into Virginia, you don't have as much national forest coverage overlying the Blue Ridge Parkway as you do in North Carolina. But as you get into the valleys and you get into the farming areas, you know, you do get some runoff into the rivers and streams that are coming off of the parkway. But still, generally, you've still got a lot of fishing before it gets down to that point.
Yeah, right. And that sounds like where you'd like to be fishing is. Yeah.
Yeah, that's where you're going to be anyway, you know, typically.
Yeah, sounds good. Tell us about, well, let me tell you what, it's time for my first break. I get involved and I forget about these things because I get interested in who I'm talking to.
But you got to pay the bills.
Let me do a quick break here and I'll be right back.
Okay.
The Ugly Bug Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming has been serving fly fishers in Wyoming and around the world since 1983. Their selection of top-of-the-line gear and a huge assortment of flies is one of the best in the land. All products are available in their fly shop and online. Looking for advice? Just give them a call and their expert professional staff will help you with whatever you need. Visit the Ugly Bug Fly Shop today at uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. Again, that's uglybugflyshop.com or call them at 866-845-9284. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Sam Johnson about fly fishing Virginia's Blue Ridge Parkway. And if you'd like to ask Sam a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use that Q&A text box to send us your question, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Sam, I always ask my guests what's going on in your fly fishing world, and after talking to you, you've got a lot of things going on, so tell us about, you know, all your businesses, your TV, and all that stuff.
Well, I'm still, you know, work for a living in the business advisory world, transaction advisory. I'm a partner in a firm called Nautilus Strategy Group, and that's just a short, souped-up way of saying we help companies buy, sell, and trade each other. So that's my real job that I spend several days a week doing. But the rest of my life, for the most part, is consumed with wild bearings. And wild bearings, we've got several different things going on. Of course, the two books, which have taken on a life of their own. We've got this TV show called Wild Bearings Outdoors that was launched several years ago. We're heading into our third season now. Just finished shooting the Biltmore State up in Asheville, North Carolina. We fly fished the same waters that old George Vanderbilt was fishing. And, you know, we've got the show going on. We've got webcasts that we do once a month on a major watershed somewhere in the country. And all of those, along with our TV show, are curated on our YouTube channel, Wild Bearings Outdoors YouTube. And then the newest thing, Roger, we've got going, we've been making bamboo fly rods for a long, long time. We've made, you know, hundreds of rods for L.L. Bean, Wright McGill, a lot of Granger rods. We're launching a bamboo rod making series. It's going to be a series of 10 videos that will be web-based, cloud-based, and that's going to launch Thanksgiving Eve is when all of those are going to be loaded onto our site that people can subscribe to. We've had so many requests for classes, and we just don't have time to do classes. But we are going to do a professionally produced series of showing people, here's how we make bamboo fly rods. And that's kind of the newest thing that we've got going. But that's kind of what I do. That's kind of where I am, on top of chasing the bagpipes and taking care of my Siberian Huskies and my wife and the property we've got in North Georgia.
Well, so we've got Wild Bearings Outdoors on YouTube, if folks want to go and check you out there. And then we have wildbearings.com, which is your website, correct?
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct. Everything's available on there. Our books are on there, flies, bamboo rods, whatever.
Great, great. So that's where you know how to reach and follow Sam, folks. So check him out and see what he's got going on out there. And that series on bamboo rod building sounds good. We might have to do a show in conjunction with that. Maybe we can help you to launch that. So we'll talk more about that. Yeah, yeah.
Sure.
So let's talk about the different water types that we might encounter along the parkway. And I imagine, they may differ, but maybe be all very similar as well. So, and what I mean by water types, are we talking streams, rivers, you know, size, typography, that kind of stuff? So kind of give us a general. I know we're going to dig in later on specific fisheries, but I'm trying to just give the people a general feel here. So.
Yeah, Roger, it's a mixture of everything from pretty good sized rivers, you know, like the James River, you know, that crosses the Blue Ridge Parkway, to the French Broad River, which are large bodies of water, all the way down to little blue liners that are up in the higher elevation. So you've got a mix of big water, small water, intermediate water, because all this water is coming off the Blue Ridge Parkway, which as a general rule is at a higher elevation, starts small, builds and comes down into the valley in the watershed. And we kind of classify them into two categories, kind of a little bit of humorous twist on this. We call a lot of it, you know, is what we would call assisted living water. I mean, this is right where you can step right out of your Lexus, put your waders on and step into the creek. It's got a gradient of less than 2%. And so it's very, very easy to move around. It's safe. No, probably not waterfalls and everything, but there's still a lot of fish in there. And then, you know, on the other end of that spectrum, which is generally higher in the elevations, is, you know, it's where you pack in, rappel down the side of a cliff, and really, you know, taking your life in your own hands to just get on the stream. And that's typically a buddy fishing type of thing, where you generally don't want to go back up in there by yourself unless you've got, you know, you want someone with you. So you got a mix of water in this Virginia section, just like you do in North Carolina. And In the book, I list the gradient, and I calculate the gradients of each of these streams to where you can, when you're planning, you can look at it and have a pretty good idea of how difficult, what the difficulty factor will be for you.
Okay. Now, I'm trying to envision, you know, we've got this parkway, this road going basically following the ridge line down the Appalachians, right?
That's correct.
And to get to some of these different rivers and streams and so forth, are there then side roads off of that that follow the streams down? What is the access, you know, in general like to these places? I mean, you just
Nearly.
explained, yeah, we have roadside and so forth, but is there like a network of roads coming off the parkway that follow these creeks
Yeah,
and streams? Yeah.
exactly. All of the rivers and creeks, streams, seeps, everything that I've written about that I've fished for the last 55, 60 years of my life, there's a network not only of the parkway, some of these run along the parkway, and
Oh.
some cross the parkway, but then there's a network of Forest Service roads and or state or federal highways or county roads that go off the parkway that provide access to these rivers and streams. So getting to them, it may take some driving off the parkway to navigate down to where you can get on the stream, but most of these creeks and watersheds that we're talking about, you're not going to have to be packing in long distances to get to them.
Okay. Is there any concern after you leave the park with private versus public water?
Yes, absolutely, because you've got the Blue Ridge Parkway, which has its own right-of-way, and in some places that right-of-way may be a half a mile wide, in some places it may be just a few hundred feet, and then it may go into national forest, or it may go into private land. And so I'm as careful as I possibly can be, both when I'm fishing and when I'm riding, to designate what's private and what's not. And, you know, my rule of thumb is when in doubt, you know, just don't fish it. You know, I mean,
right.
If you're not sure about it, don't invade someone's private property. That's not fair to do that. But, yes, there's private land that adjoins the right-of-way, but in many places it's national forest or wilderness areas that's open for fishing.
Okay. Tell us about gear. You've got a lot of different kinds of water, but if a person were to go up there, you know, for a week or two and want to explore a lot of the different fisheries, what would you bring for, you know, what weight rod, you know, length, line, that kind of stuff to have yourself covered up there?
Well, that's always a question people ask. And, you know, the kind of the long and short on that is if I'm going to be up on a blue liner, I'm going to be in a higher elevation chasing a brook trout in a stream that's, you know, 8 feet across, I'm probably going to be fishing like a 6 foot, 2 weight rod, and this Rubicon bamboo rod that I make and fish. But, you know, anything short like that, lightweight, chasing those small fish. And of course, you know, the reason being, number one, the fish are small.
Right.
But two, there, most of these creeks where a lot of these square tails live are going to be overgrown with rhododendron and laurel, dog hobble. And so you're not doing a lot of overarm casting. You're doing a lot of slingshots, roll cast, and things like that. So a shorter rod on those upper elevations are going to serve you well. As you get down into the midwaters where the streams and rivers or streams are a little bit larger, I'm going to go to probably a 7 to 7.5 foot 3 or 4 weight and fish that. But when I get into the valleys, I get into the bottom of the watershed where the water is a little bit larger and the fish are larger, I'm going to stick with my 8 foot 5 weight. Is what I'm probably going to fish. And it's rare, Roger, that I fish any of these Blue Ridge Parkway rivers or streams with anything larger than an 8 foot 5 weight.
Yeah, that's interesting because that's, well, a 5 weight is always kind of the go-to weight rod around the world almost for most fishing. But
yeah, right.
But an 8 foot is kind of short by standards out west, you know. So,
oh, absolutely.
So that's interesting to hear that. A lot of lightweight gear, but that's important what you've told us, because there's a big difference between the rods that you just mentioned, especially for access. I mean, a rod that's too long is just going to cause you all kinds of aggravation and bad words during the day. So.
Well, with all the rhododendron and laurel, I have learned some new words that would make pirates blood, I can tell you right now. But I'll also say, Roger, that what I just recommended, or that's what I fish, and that's what I'm comfortable with. Now, someone else fishing the same water may fish a longer rod or a shorter rod with a heavier or lighter weight, and they're comfortable with it. So, you know, it's just my experience and my taste is what I just described to you.
Sure, sure. Now, what species of fish can we fish for?
Well, you're going to be catching brook, brown, and rainbow trout. The browns and rainbows, of course, in the lower elevations, typically below barriers or falls or where they can't get further upstream. The higher elevations in both Virginia and North Carolina is generally where you're going to find the brook trout, because that's kind of where we, with our logging that we did in the early part of the last century, that's kind of where they ended up. You know, the only place they could survive after we cut all the forest off. But brook, brown, and rainbows are what you're going to catch in the waters that we're talking about right now.
Okay. There was a question about, and I don't think I posted it in the ones that I've sent you, but about smallmouth. Is there any smallmouth fishing in any of these fisheries?
Yeah, there actually are, even in, you know, where some of these rivers and streams go into the larger rivers like the James, or you have going into the French Broad down in North Carolina, you're going to have some smallmouth that are going to be popping up occasionally. And of course, the further you go down them, the more prevalent you're going to find the smallmouths. Even in, you got muskies in the middle of Asheville, North Carolina, or pipes, whatever you want to call them. But they're like typhoon-class submarines, man. I mean, they're definitely at the top of the food chain.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, good. So, but primarily brook, brown, and rainbows, and trout in general up and down the parkway. And I guess I had kind of imagined, I had in my head that that there wouldn't be the larger types of rivers, but what, and so that changes my, almost changes my question, but let's talk about hatches. I assume that maybe in the upper blue liners and so forth, you're going to deal with a lot of just attractor patterns and not trying to match the hatch and so forth. But are there, in the larger waters, are there other major hatches that you should be aware of and be prepared to fish?
There are. You're going to have, you know, the typical, you know, lineup of mayflies, caddis, stoneflies, midges, a lot of blue wings, a lot of sulfurs that you're going to see. And of course, you know, ants. This time of the year, hoppers are doing really well. The mid, you know, early part of the summer, you know, we got the little worms falling out of the trees. But it's going to be the typical lineup that you're going to find up and down the parkway. That I found the whole entire 469 miles, I'm embarrassed to tell you that there's about six or eight flies that I fish 90% of the time because of the way I fish. Now, my business partner, Chris Sloan, he'll stand at a pool or a run, and he'll tie on 15 bugs until he catches a fish. I mean, I blow through there. If they don't hit my first two or three bugs that I'm fishing, I'm gone. So my style of fishing is to, I cover a lot of water, and I don't tie on, I'm not always tying on bugs. So I'm not as technical as some of my buddies are, but we all catch fish. I just cover more water than they do.
Yeah, it's interesting. I've just been in the process of minimizing my fly selection that I carry for the day, you know, and it's a difference, you know, if you're floating a boat or something and you have extra gear and you can put it there, but my vest was getting pretty darn heavy over the years. Why am I carrying all this? I met a guy and here I've got on this big vest one day. This is many years ago, but we're in the parking lot, and the guy, we just started talking to him, and he's got like no vest on, or you know, and we're talking, and I said, "Oh yeah, have you fished here before?" And I said, "Yeah, well, what are you fishing with?" And he says, "Oh well, I've got these," and he pulled out an Altoids box, you know, one of those metal Altoids. And he's got about, I don't know, 25 flies in there. And he says, "Well, this is what I use. I never bring any more than this."
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I go, "Why am I carrying all this stuff?"
Well, that's almost me. I mean, I'm a minimalist when it comes to entomology. And now my friends, my buddies I fish with, I mean, they're like a fly shop going up and down the river. And I mean, they open their fly box, and there are literally hundreds of flies in there.
Right.
And it just doesn't make sense to me, but that they catch fish, and I catch fish, and we're all happy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and I found, you know, more so, especially with nymphing, you know, that it's more a matter of getting to the fish, making sure you're in the right place and the right water column.
Right.
You know, that's more important than the actual fly. And if you're not there, it doesn't matter what fly you're fishing. You're not going to catch any fish, you know. So
that's exactly right.
Yeah. Okay, good. Now, this is kind of a detailed question here that James in Idaho sent in. He says, "Do most of the streams exhibit similar insect diversity, biomass, and trout populations, or do some have more richness and bug life? If yes, what are the factors that contribute to their increased productivity?"
Well, you know, I would say that, yeah, there is some diversity, especially as you move up the Blue Ridge Parkway from Cherokee, North Carolina, which is mile 469. Super high elevation, a lot of igneous rock, very little calcium in the water. The entomology is not near as good as it is as you start getting up into Virginia. So the answer to that is, yeah, you're going to find more bugs as you move up into Virginia than you do generally in the waters of North Carolina. Biomass, I would say, is very similar, just given the nature of where most of these rivers and streams are. But you got more mineral deposits up in the Virginia area than you do in Carolina. And obviously, that's going to affect the number of bugs. I mean, I pick up a rock up in Castle Rock, for instance, up in Virginia, and turn it over, and I'll count 5 or 6, 7 bugs crawling around on the bottom of that rock. I go to the Davidson River or the East Fork of the Yellowstone River in North Carolina, and there'll be 3 bugs there. And so that's all about just the richness of the substrate that this water's running through.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Need to take another quick break, but when we come back, Jason in Kentucky asked about what those 6 flies are that you use.
I figured someone would.
Yeah, so we'll come back to that in just a few minutes or a few seconds. Discover the power of pure Skagit with Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics. From delicate soft tackles to hefty steelhead flies, OPST's versatile casting system meets the demands of every angling situation. With Ed Ward's unparalleled Skagit rod design and casting expertise, OPST offers you a quicker route to mastering effective casting techniques. Whether battling wind and rain or targeting steelhead trout or smallmouth bass, trust OPST's innovative rods, lines, and tips to elevate your fishing experience. Join the ranks of skilled anglers who rely on OPST for consistency, proficiency, and a superior fly fishing adventure. Unleash your potential with OPST today. Visit PierceGadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. Again, that's PierceGadget.com or call them at 206-858-8476. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Sam Johnson about fly fishing Virginia's Blue Ridge Parkway. If you'd like to ask Sam a question, just fill out that form on our homepage, send it in, and we'll see if we can't get it answered. And let me hold on just a second. All right. So let's talk about that. Jason in Kentucky says, if you had to choose 6 flies to use along the Blue Ridge Parkway, what would they be?
Well, that's a again, now this is me, Jason. This is not my best friend Chris Sloan or a lot of the other guys that I fish with, but you know, my three or four go-to dry flies are BWOs, Adams, assortment of caddises, Royal Wolfs, Comparendums. Those are 95% of the time I've got one of those on top, and I'm dropping underneath it, you know, some type of soft hackle. I love soft hackle, seem to do really well with them, both beaded and not and unbeaded. Zebras, just a full assortment of zebras, you know, black, brown, purple, reds. I love those purples, and the fish seem to also. Any type of split case or pheasant tail, bead heads, I'm going to drop underneath. My droppers, I'm anywhere from an 18 to a 20 on those. And on my dry flies on top, I'm, you know, 14 to 16 generally, depending on the size of the water. So that when you see Sam Johnson in a stream, you can just about bet for sure that one of those six or eight, or two of those six or eight flies are going to be on my dry dropper rig. That's how I'm going to start out. And then depending on where the fish are in the column, if they're on the bottom, then I may start dropping two down to them, get rid of the dry fly. Or if they're coming up, I'll get rid of the dropper and maybe tie on, you know, like a little polywing midge or something to trail behind my caddis. Is generally how I'll fish these streams.
Yeah, and that answers Terry Little's question from Virginia Roanoke. He was asking about your dry dropper setup. So, you answered it all there in one answer. So, sounds good. But Dan, does the same thing apply to fall season? Dan in Illinois was asking about good patterns for the fall season.
Well, for me, it does. I mean, you know, the entomology is not changing that much. The fall, I'm probably going to go with a few more hopper patterns on top just because of, you know, especially in the lower elevations where you're getting into pasture and farming areas or open forest, you're going to have more hopper activity, so I'll go to a hopper. But the bugs I'm dropping underneath are probably going to be the same.
Okay. Well, let's talk, let's dig into the different sections of the parkway. You broke, in your book, you broke these out, and you said there's 217 miles in the Virginia portion. There was 469 total. That includes North Carolina. But the Virginia section, you broke it out into four sections. And I guess they ran somewhere around 50, 55 miles each section, I think you said they were. And that was just a matter of convenience, not because of the topology or anything, just breaking it out. Okay, good. I just want to make sure. So let's explore these. And starting, as we do in your book, you know, with section one, and this is mile 217. So are we moving up or down from north to south or south to north when we're talking about section one and going to the other sections?
You're going to start, you're going north on the Blue Ridge Parkway. And the reason being is because the first book, the Blue Ridge Parkway, North Carolina section, section one started in Cherokee, North Carolina, which is actually the end of the parkway.
Oh, okay. And, I was just going to ask you that.
And section four ended at there at Cumberland, there at the line where it crosses the north out of North Carolina into Virginia. That drives the parkway people crazy because technically the Blue Ridge Parkway starts in Waynesboro, Virginia, and it ends down in Cherokee. But see, I started in Cherokee, and I'm going north. So that's the reason section one in the Virginia section starts at the line, and then we're going to continue north to Waynesboro.
Okay. And can you give us a general description about that section, you know, topology, types of water, that kind of thing?
Yeah, it is 54 miles of it. In my opinion, now again, this is Sam's opinion, it's the least trout water, the least productive trout water, at least for the rivers and streams that I fished, of all of the four sections. Now, that is not saying that there's not a lot of good water there, because there is. because it starts there at the North Carolina-Virginia line, just southeast of Galax, there at Cumberland Knob, and then heads north along the Appalachian chain. And just as soon as you leave that area, you'll pass a real special place called the Blue Ridge Music Center. And it's an outdoor venue for mountain music, and the East Fork of Chestnut Creek runs right through it, which is one of my favorite streams. And then it continues on up, goes, you know, through Mabry Mill and Meadows of Dan, and up to a very beautiful place called Rock Castle Gorge, which has a great stream running through it. And then right past there at Rocky Knob Vista Center, and Floyd is the top of Section 1. And so you got 54 miles, and you got a lot of water along there, but you've also got a lot of just really cool stuff along there. When you get tired of fishing, you can go listen to bluegrass music, or you can go into Floyd and drink a craft beer.
There you go. There you go. Well, let's pick out, two or three of the streams or rivers that you encounter in Section 1, and tell us in a bit more detail about those or why you like those.
Okay. I would have to say that in Section 1, that my favorite watershed, and this is a big watershed, it's by far the biggest one there, is the Dan River. And it's got like four key sections, the way I break it down. Right under Castle Gorge is where it forms up and then flows down 4.4 miles to Meadows of Dan. That area does go through a lot of farm area. It is not in national forest, but it's a lot of open water there to fish, and it's easy fishing. And roads are paralleling it all the way down that 4.4 miles down to Meadows of Dan. And then below Meadows of Dan, you have Talbert Dam, which is backing up a huge lake. And behind that dam, all the way down to Towns Reservoir, there's about 4.8 miles. The only way to get in there is to either to backpack or to canoe in there and then wade up the creek. It is exotic fishing. I've considered exotic fishing because you're not going to see anyone else in there, and the only way you're going to get in there is to expend some energy. So that's not for everyone, but for those of you who want some outback fishing, chasing some wild fish in a beautiful setting, then that below Talbert Dam down to Towns Reservoir, that 4.8 miles is really, really nice. Rainbow and brown trout primarily, what you'll catch there. And then below Towns Dam down to a hydroelectric plant about 3.4 miles below Towns Dam goes through a gorge. And this is one of these gorges, although there's a trail that goes up by it. You can either go from the dam and go down to the hydro plant, or you can come up and park at the hydro plant and fish upstream and come back down the trail. This is a buddy fishing place that you do not want to go in there unless you've got someone with you, and you definitely don't want to be in there after dark. It's urban legend has that it's got some of the largest brown trout in Virginia in that part of the river. I have never seen anything approaching a trophy fish like that, but that's what a lot of the locals say. Mm-hmm. And then the fourth part of that, Roger, is below the hydro plant, about 5 miles downstream to Old Bridge Road, the bridge that crosses it, is where I end that section in my book. And that is parallel by a really good road. It's assisted living fishing. It's about a 2% gradient. You got two really good tributaries, Roaring Creek and Squaw Creek, that come into it, and both of those are fishable. So I would have to say that my favorite section of my favorite watershed in Section 1 would be the Dan River. And just pick and choose, you know, pick your poison kind of thing. Assisted living to take your life in your own hands.
And it's all. I've never heard of this assisted living, but yeah, I'm getting maybe closer to that every year.
Well, I think we're all getting there, and I was sensitive to make sure the book had some of that in there, because I've got friends that's it. You know, I mean, if they can't get out of their Range Rover into the into the
Yeah.
creek. They're not going to do it.
Well,
I would
you
have.
know, it's, yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm
Oh,
sorry.
I was going to change something, but go ahead. Finish what
Okay,
you're saying.
I would say the second creek would probably surprise a lot of people. And in fact,
Okay.
I've been.
I didn't know where you're
I,
going on to a second creek, so hold on. I got some questions about this Dan's River. So before we go on there, you mentioned hydroelectric plants and dams and reservoirs. And now, does that make for some nice tailwater fishing along Dan's River then?
Yeah, below town's dam, down to the hydro plant is tailwater.
Okay, the whole section.
It
Okay.
that is tailwater, and then from Talbert Dam, down to town's reservoir is tailwater.
Okay. And maybe that's why the reason they think there's some big fish in there.
You know,
Yeah.
I've never heard the reasoning behind people saying there's big browns in there, but I've never seen anything bigger than 14-inch fish in
Yeah.
there. And that's a nice size brown, you know, for the southeast, but that's by no means, you know, trophy size.
Yeah. No, that's that's interesting. Well, and you don't know, like I was up on the Henry's Fork, and it was like our maiden voyage of our drift boat, because we picked up a hide boat up there in Idaho, and we were putting it in, and there was a, you know, one of these diversion dams, and there was a kid fishing there with I don't know if he was fishing with bait, or I think he was fishing with bait and or lure or something. But right in the bottom of that diversion, you know, where it's like all the hydro activities going on, you know, for a fly fisherman, you'd play hell trying to get a fly down in there anywhere, you know.
Sure.
But he was getting down in there, and while we're putting it in, you know, he pulled out like a 26-inch brown, you know, and I'm going, oh my gosh, you know.
It's amazing
But
what
you
you can do
know,
with power bait and worms, isn't
exactly
it?
at the bottom of a hydro, you know, a diversion dam. So yeah, you know, there can always be those big ones in there, but getting them is another
Yeah.
story. Okay, and sorry I interrupted you, but
No,
and then you were going to talk about the second one, second.
that's fine. Yeah. The second watershed that I probably surprised would surprise some people. In fact, I've had one guy just really get after me from somewhere in email about this Chestnut Creek, which is the first creek right there at the North Carolina-Virginia line, right below Galax. You got the West Fork of Chestnut Creek, which was the first trout stream that I ever fished in Virginia back in the 60s, the mid-60s, in fact. But its sister stream is the East Fork, which is another headwater. So you got the West Fork and the East Fork are the two headwaters of Chestnut Creek that flows through Galax and continues north, you know, further up and goes in a larger river. But there's about 2.1 miles of the East Fork that I write about in the book that starts at the Blue Ridge Parkway and flows into the Blue Ridge Music Center, which is a Blue Ridge Parkway facility, and it flows through it and then branches out, and it has a lot of fish in it. And Roger, probably the reason I like it the most is that it's the only place that I know on the Blue Ridge Parkway that you can go stand in a trout stream and catch brook trout and hear bluegrass music on a stage about 50 yards away, and there may be 3,000 people over there.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just a kind of
Yeah.
a magical kind of place to fish, and it was one of the first streams that I fished in Virginia when I started fishing and kind of collecting all of this data. So Chestnut Creek, a lot of people discount it and say it's over the hill, but I still like it a lot. So
Find it, yeah.
that's my second go-to stream in section one. And then my third stream would be Rock Castle Creek at Rocky Knob Recreation Area. This is a deep gorge with a creek heading up at the very beginning of it. Rock Castle Creek flows easterly, almost like a rocket sled. It's just as straight as an arrow, all the way down for right at about 4.3 miles. and has a really neat little tributary called Little Rock Castle Creek that comes literally off the parkway. And good access, good parking. You have camping right there at it, right at where Little Rock Creek and Rock Castle Creek come together. There's camping, and there's a Forest Service road that parallels Rock Castle Creek all the way up. And you're going to catch, you know, what I caught there are rainbows and brook trout in the upper reaches of that creek. Even though it's not high, it's extremely remote, very protected, and very clean water. So I'd recommend someone that that's looking for just some really neat gorge fishing, Rock Castle Creek is a good one. And okay, those are the three for section one that I would hold pretty special.
I want you to kind of quickly go through the layout of each of these fisheries in your book, because I think okay, that's important if people are thinking about getting your book. Because I was just looking at this one, at the Rock Castle Creek, and it says pressure, slight to moderate, fishing right, quality, good, and so forth. But why don't you run through that, and then I'll ask you about the when we get the pressure. So
sure,
tell us how you've organized each
okay
section.
Well, you know, I ask the same questions nearly everyone listening to this program probably ask, more or less all of these kind of things. When I'm thinking about going fishing somewhere, these are the things I want to know. If someone says, go fish Rock Castle Creek, I want to know, well, Sam, what was your impression of it? Well, I ranked it a 3 thumbs up out of 5, if that tells you anything. So, that's kind of what I ranked it. So every watershed, every flow in the book, I'll rank it with either a 1 or, you know, anywhere between 1 and 5 thumbs up. And then I give the GPS fixes for the source and the mouth fix. So you know exactly the section of the water that I'm writing about here. And sometimes mm-hmm, the source may be the actual source of where it's bubbling out of the ground, or it may just be where the water becomes fishable and you have access to. But I'll tell you that. And I'll tell you the GPS fix, and I'll give you the elevation of both the source and the mouth. And then I'll tell you the size of the creek at the mouth. Now, keep in mind, this is Sam Johnson's opinion. I'm not getting out there with a tape measure and a transit, you know, shooting laser,
yeah,
you know, distance ranging. Is it small? Is it medium? Is it large? Is it very large? And I describe each of those in the start of the book as to kind of generally, if I would say a small, it's going to be somewhere between 6 and probably 8, 10 feet wide. If it's medium, you know, it kind of goes up from there.
Okay.
I also list the tributaries. If there are sizable, fishable tributaries, I will list them if I have fished them. I will not list them if I don't fish them. Because they probably can't be fished. And then I list what's important for a lot of us, especially as we get older. I list the gradient. And the gradient can be anywhere from just over, you know, 0%, where there's just enough gradient where the water can flow, all the way up to, there are some streams in here where the gradient is in excess of 20%. And, you know, here's the way I calculate that. I take the source fix, and I take the mouth fix, and I calculate, I subtract the two, and that gives me the number of feet a drop over that distance. And then I calculate it into feet per mile, and that gives me a percentage. And so I will tell you that, you know, like, for instance, Chestnut Creek, the West Fork is 1.2%, which means that if you took, you know, for instance, if you took a 10-foot 2x4 and raised one end of it 1 foot, that would be a 10% gradient.
Mm-hmm.
And so the visual image of what I'm doing
sure,
here with these rivers and
sure,
streams. So you
sure,
can look at that and you can say, well, you know, 1.2%, that's assisted living.
Yeah.
Now, if it gets above about 12 to 13%, you know, you're going to be huffing and puffing occasionally. If it gets
right,
above 16 to 18%, you know, it's going to be hand over hand between
plunge pools. And yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And then right underneath the gradient, I'll tell you my opinion. Now, this is based on SAM, and I'm in pretty good shape. You know, I work out, you know, and I can do all that kind of stuff. I rank it the effort. Is it easy? Is it moderate? Is it difficult? Is it exhausting?
Mm-hmm.
And that's typically based on the gradient. Underneath that, I'll tell you the pressure. Now, this is what I've experienced. It may not be what you experience, but the pressure is what I've experienced when I've been on the creek. How many people did I see? And mm-hmm. I'll rank it from none to slight to moderate to heavy. I'll rank it up where you can get a feel of, you know, how alone you're going to be while you're on there.
Right.
And then, Roger, I'll list the fishing quality for me, Sam Johnson, you know, anywhere from poor to excellent, fair, good, anywhere in between. That's my experience fishing it with my six flies that I fish with. And then I'll list the species, and I've gotten in trouble for this, too. I mean, these are the fish that either the DNR says are in there and or I've caught. The problem is this. Sometimes the DNR doesn't list a brook trout, for instance, but I caught a brook trout, and I'll list it as one of the species, and I'll have some guy just beat me up that there's no brook trout in that stream. Well, I did catch a brook trout in that stream. The problem is nobody told that brook trout he wasn't supposed to be in there. and no. So anyway, if I catch a fish, I'm going to put him on here. Now, the DNR may not list it, but I'm listing him here. So just take it with a grain of salt, and, you know, that's just the way things work. And then the last thing I list, Roger's access. How do you get there? I get in trouble mm-hmm. for that, too, but I get for the source. How do you get to the source? Some of these going for paragraphs of turn right, turn left, take this road, go to the second pine tree, turn, you know, and I do the same thing for the mouth. So just about everything as a fly fisherman you want to know about a creek is what I've listed at the beginning of every watershed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and then you get an overall description of, it looks like, the area, the kind of fishing, some experiences you've had, that kind of thing.
I do. I write a description. And, of course, a lot of the beginning of these watersheds will be some history or lore or stories or my experience, if it was notable, everything from snake bites to you name it, that I've experienced in some of these watersheds. But a lot of history about what went on in that watershed. And then we get into fishing it. And I start by talking from the source to the mouth, you know, the flow of that water, what happens all the way down. And sometimes that takes a page or two to do. And then I start at the mouth, and I fish up the creek and tell you my experience in each of the sections going mm-hmm. up. So you can kind of do a quick read, kind of a cliff note version at the first of the chapter, or you can read the whole chapter and have a more understanding of the, you know, the culture, the flow, the experiences, and everything.
That history always interests me as well. I know in Colorado here, we do a lot of backpacking, hiking, that kind of stuff.
And right.
Sometimes you'll go up this steep trail and you'll come into a meadow and there's no road, right? I mean,
right.
And there's like a steam boiler or something rusting there. And you go, how the hell did they get that thing up here? You know, I mean, the people of those times were made of something more than we're made of today, I believe. but that history, it makes you wonder sometimes. And a lot of it is not documented. So, you know, when you can document, it's nice that you're able to do that. But, well, we're running short on time, so I'm going to have to limit you to two fisheries for the next three sections. So let's see if we can give people a little good taste of the other three sections before we close out tonight.
We definitely can do that. You know, section two, the water's getting better up there, although, in my opinion, not as much of it in that from mile marker 162 to mile marker 108, which includes Roanoke, by the way. And so, you know, it starts just above Rock Castle Gorge, just below Floyd, and heads north and stops just before it gets into George Washington and, you know, Jefferson National Forest. The biggest water in that area is the Roanoke River system, you know, flowing the urban flow through Roanoke. A lot of put and take, a lot of delayed harvest there, but there's still a lot of water along there. And here are the two watersheds that I would recommend. The first one is the South Fork of the Blackwater River. That's a headwater of the Blackwater. The Green Creek, which you'll access from Callaway, Virginia, is one of the headwaters there. And Roaring Run is another one of the headwaters. It's tiny. Don't waste any time trying to fish that. But Green Creek is paralleled by a road nearly all the way up to right under the parkway. And it's just a fun place to fish. I mean, you're in everything from open pastures there, and you'll feel like you're in Montana, to you're going from drop pool as you get into higher elevations. So Green Creek, okay. There's 7 miles of fishing along there. The second one that I've got to mention, just because there's so much of it, is the Roanoke River as it flows through Roanoke. There are four sections to that. You got a delayed harvest section in Roanoke County. It's a mile there in a park that literally you can just step out of your car, walk right down in the river and fish. Easy fishing, big river, big water, open casting, bows and browns primarily. Right below that, you've got 2.3 miles of put and take water that's in the city limits of Salem. Right outside of Roanoke, or actually part of Roanoke, I guess. And then right below that, you have another delayed harvest section that's also in the city of Salem, which goes for about 1.4 miles. And then finally, the last section is a put-and-take section that's actually in the city limits of Roanoke. That's 1.9 miles. So you see, you've got about 6 or 7 miles of urban fly fishing in some pretty water, a big river, totally wadeable. Every bit of it's wadeable and has some deep runs that, you know, you can get into. But, Roger, those are the two that I would throw in section two. Section three.
Hold on, quick question about a term you used, delayed harvest. Is that something we don't have anything like that out here? What does delayed harvest mean?
Delayed harvest is where the DNR in a local state, this kind of the IRS short form version of this, the DNR in the local state will designate a time frame that they'll stock the river with big fish and lots of fish.
Oh.
And it's just put and take during the delayed harvest season. You cannot, no keeping fish, but you can catch a lot of fish. And then after season, you can take the fish. You can keep the fish. So there's holdovers. But it really loads the river up with a lot of larger than average fish during the delayed harvest season, and you can catch a lot of fish. Mm-hmm. We like to say they're, you know, halfway through it, these fish are, we say they're stupid because they come out of a hatchery, they're
right.
Hungry, they'll hit just about anything you throw at them. So, you know, for someone who just wants to go out and catch a lot of fish and have a good time, you'll catch a lot of fish, and then by golly, there are going to be days you'll go out there and you got to work for it. So you just never know.
Right, right. Okay, good. Just wanted to get clarification on that.
Okay, section three, again, 54 miles. It goes from mile marker 108, just northeast of Roanoke, up to mile marker 54, just under, I think it's Punchbowl Mountain and Lynchburg Reservoir. This section takes off. And for the first time, the Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia starts getting into national forests, specifically Jefferson National Forest and George Washington National Forest. And then it gets into some wilderness areas, the Thunder Ridge Wilderness Area, the James River Face Wilderness, and just has a ton of good fishing in there. The first creek that I would mention fishing is a creek called Jennings Creek. It's about roughly 10 miles, real close to Buchanan, Virginia, and has four large tributaries. It has North Creek, Middle Creek, McFalls Creek, Falling Water Creek. North Creek, the first one, is my favorite creek. Really two good tributaries, Cornelius and Apple Orchard Creek. And Roger, this watershed is the only place on the Blue Ridge Parkway that I know of that the Russians had targeted for a first strike back during the Cold War. And that was not to kill fish or get rid of people, but it was to knock out a NORAD radar installation that's sitting on top of Apple Orchard Mountain, which is where Jennings Creek, North Creek, comes off of. And those radar domes are still up there. You can still see them. So it's kind of an exotic place to hang out. And there's a bunch of fish in there, too. I mean, there's a lot of stuff
that's
in there.
Interesting. NORAD is something that I grew up with. My dad was an intelligence officer in the Air Force, and spent many assignments at NORAD command centers. So, yeah, I'm pretty aware of that. They were buildings with no windows. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, there's buildings still up there with no windows. Now it's an air traffic control radar installation. They still use it, but it's just FAA now.
Yeah.
But anyway, Jennings Creek, a lot of water along there to fish. The second one there that I would mention would be the East Fork of Elk Creek, which is in the James River Face Wilderness area, about 3.5 miles parallel by Forest Service Road or County Road. I don't know which one it is, but a lot of old mining activity that took place there. Roger, you'd probably be comfortable there because it wasn't gold mining, but it was mineral mining. And you can still see some of that stuff there, but it's a pretty neat place and a place that you can catch a lot of fish. And so those are the two in the third section. The fourth section, which to me, from mile marker 54 to mile marker 0 at Waynesboro, which is the true beginning of the Blue Ridge Parkway, to me this is some of the richest fishing up there. The James River Visitor Center, just under Punch Bowl Mountain, Lynchburg Reservoir, going north into George Washington and Jefferson National Forest. You get into St. Mary's Wilderness, which has really, really good fishing, all the way up to the very end of the Blue Ridge Parkway. And there are the two rivers that I would fish there. My favorite river of the entire Virginia section is a little creek called Piney Creek, real close to Alhambra, about 2.1 miles. Piney Creek, to me, is the most beautiful river east of the Rockies, a large mountain stream east of the Rockies. I don't know of any other headwaters that are any more beautiful than Piney Creek. So if you're looking for exotic fishing, a lot of brook and rainbows, and easy to get to from off the road, but can be difficult fishing just because of the topography, it's just a beautiful creek to fish. And then the last one I'll mention in section four is a tributary of the Peddler River below Lynchburg Reservoir. It's at the very end of the delayed harvest section. It's called Browns Creek. And that runs for 6 miles all the way up and under the Blue Ridge Parkway through a tunnel that the creek goes through. You actually can drive through. You can drive up the creek to get under the Blue Ridge Parkway through this arched stone tunnel. Very exotic place. In fact, there's a picture of it in the book. But once you get up there, it's all brook trout, and you will not see another person up there. So those are the four sections with just a sample of the water that's up there. Virginia is very rich fly fishing. Great lower elevation, easier fishing than North Carolina section of the Blue Ridge Parkway. But I think the water, to me, is actually more productive than the North Carolina section.
Okay, yeah, that was the question I was going to ask. Gary Kaufman, who's a longtime listener of the show, he's in North Carolina, and he was wondering about if you could address similar fly fishing opportunities in North Carolina mountains. That's for another show, I think, Gary, but I think what Sam just said is that maybe the better fishing is up north. The further north you go, it sounds like.
Only by degrees, you know. Yeah. Again, that's my opinion because there are a lot of fish in North Carolina also, obviously.
Yeah, and considering the beauty of those mountains and that parkway, I mean, you really can't miss anywhere along there as far as enjoying yourself and enjoying nature, it
No.
sounds like.
Well,
And what,
it's
it's really
the old saying, fish, trout don't live in ugly places. I mean,
right,
it's that's
exactly.
true. That's been true in both states for sure.
Yeah, very good, very good. Well, we've run out of time here and got to close things up, but stick with me, Sam, because we're going to do some
Okay.
giveaways here. We're going to give away a
All right.
membership to Fly Fishers International and one to Trout Unlimited, and we're going to give away a copy of your book, courtesy of Mountain Harbor Press. So stick with me. We're going to do another quick break here, and then we'll give those prizes away, and we'll call it a night. The
Okay.
Bonefish and Tarpon Trust works very hard to safeguard the future of our beloved flats fisheries, from protecting spawning sites threatened by unsustainable fishing pressure to securing historic funding to restore Florida's Everglades and estuaries. Thanks to their members, they've expanded their conservation to the Bahamas, Belize, and Mexico. There's still much more work to be done, and they need your help. With your support, they can ensure that the flats fishery is healthy and sustainable now and for generations to come. Visit btt.org and become a member of the Bonefish and Tarpon Trust today. Again, that's btt.org. Just a quick reminder to everyone, before you leave our website tonight, please take a minute and give us some feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, "What did you think of this show?" Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Now it's time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from the show's registration database, and if you didn't register for tonight's show, it's too late now, but make sure you do so for our next show so you don't miss out on a chance to win some of these great prizes we give away. If you are one of the lucky winners, we'll contact you after the show to collect your information so that we can deliver your prize to you. So first, we'll give away a one-year membership to Fly Fishers International. And to learn more about Fly Fishers International, go to flyfishersinternational.org and check them out. They're a great organization to support. So look them up, see what they do, and join up if you don't win tonight. Looks like our winner for that's going to be Phil Burden. Phil Burden in North Carolina. So congratulations, Phil. And if you enjoy your membership, I'm sure you will. And then going to give away a one-year membership to Trout Unlimited. To learn more about Trout Unlimited, go to tu.org. Sounds like a great organization to be part of for North Carolina and Virginia with all the trout we've been talking about. So check them out as well. Another great organization to support. And it looks like our winner for that is Jason Stacy in Kentucky. Jason Stacy in Kentucky. So congratulations, gentlemen, on and winning those memberships tonight. Now let's give away a copy of Sam Johnson's book, Fly Fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway, Virginia section. And there is, like we talked about, there is a North Carolina section as well. So if you want to try the whole Blue Ridge Parkway fishing adventure, then you'll want to get both of Sam's books. Let's see. Let me clear my queue here. And the way we play this is you have to fill out the form on our homepage. And whoever answers correctly first will win a copy of Sam's book. So here we go. So it's the form on your homepage. Just fill in your answer there, your name and location. And first one to get it right wins. Okay, so the question is, I hope this isn't too difficult, but how many miles are in the Virginia section of the Blue Ridge Parkway in Sam's book for Virginia? How many miles does that cover? And of course, that's how many miles are in the Blue Ridge Parkway in Virginia. So Sam, I've got a slight delay here for them to hear the question, and then we've got to wait for them to type. So we have a little bit of time to kill. So maybe you could play some bagpipes for
Well, doggone, if I'd have known, I'd have brought
Oh, darn, darn.
them.
Oh, I love the sound of those. I think everybody does though, you know? It's just kind of this unique sound, and I think everybody's always attracted to that. And yeah, but I don't, or maybe it's just me. I don't know. Okay, let's see. I think we've got a winner here. The answer is 217 miles. Is that a winner?
That's a winner.
Okay, Mike Kalinowski in Woodlawn. I'm not sure where Woodlawn is, but Mike, you are the proud winner of Sam's book, Fly Fishing the Blue Ridge Parkway, Virginia section. So, Mike, you need to fill out the same form. Just send me your shipping address, and we will get that off to Mountain Arbor Press, and they will send you the book out directly. And so send me your shipping address. I got your email address, got your name. That's all I need. Send that in that form, and we'll be set to go. We'll get that out to you. So thanks for paying attention and listening tonight. Glad to have you aboard. And thanks for playing. Sam, thank you so much for being with us. I really appreciate you staying up late here, Neat's Coast, and sharing all your knowledge. And I think we just got a little peek into that knowledge bank of yours, but I appreciate you sharing it. And I'm glad you could join us here tonight.
Well, it was my pleasure, Roger. Thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Well, good, good. Glad to have you. Hopefully all of you have found the podcast archive on our website. If you haven't, just look for the link on the top line of our menu. In that archive, you'll find all of our past shows, over 400 shows now. You can search by keywords like Blue Ridge Parkway, like Madison River, like tarpon, like brown trout, whatever your fancy is. Take a look, and I'm sure you'll be happy with what you find. Our next broadcast will be on September 4th, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show we'll interview John Field. And our show will be fly fishing for trophy striped bass. So dive into the exhilarating world of fly fishing for trophy striped bass in our next show with John Field. Join us as he shares his behaviors, foods, best fishing spots for these spectacular sports fish. Learn the flies and techniques that promise success. And whether you're a novice or a seasoned angler, don't miss this thrilling discussion that could lead to your next big catch. What you want to do is just below John's picture on our homepage is a place where you can add that show to your calendar so you don't miss the live show. So it's right under John's photo there. Click one of those links and add it to your calendar. We'd like to thank Fly Fishers International, Trout Unlimited, Bonefish and Tarpon Trust, Mountain Arbor Press, Olympic Peninsula Skagit Tactics, Ugly Bug Fly Shop, Enrico Puglisi Flies for sponsoring our show tonight. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com. And make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.